I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me, and Colin joins us now for the showbiz segment of the show. We talk about the movies that are opening in the St. Louis area this week and other stuff that comes across our showbiz wire. How are you today, Colin?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
Good.
That's
There's
good.
Another one of these superhero blockbuster movies opening this weekend, so I know you must be excited.
Yeah, sure.
All right, contain yourself.
Excited. Wow.
X-Men Apocalypse. Now, before you get going with your review, I
yes.
just have to ask one question. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the running themes for me mm-hmm. is I hate post-apocalyptic utopian or dystopian stories.
No. Okay, yes.
All right. This one is X-Men Apocalypse, which means we're right at the cusp. We're not post-apocalyptic yet. We're at the apocalypse.
Sure.
Does that make it any better?
No.
No.
So this I don't want to say caps off, but this is part of a trilogy that Bryan Singer has been directing, X-Men First Class, and Days of Future Past was the second, and now this is X-Men Apocalypse. I've liked the first two films mm-hmm. in this trilogy-ish.
Mm-hmm.
They're just sort of continuing. So I've liked the first two films that he's directed.
Yep.
This, not so much. So this picks up. There's been time travel in these, and so it's very odd. This picks up in the 1980s, and the story centers around the main villain. Apocalypse is his name, and he's actually thousands of years old. He was the world's first mutant, and what he has the ability to do is absorb the powers of other mutants by moving his consciousness into a new body.
Mm-hmm.
And so this wakes...
Like I understood what you said.
Yes. This begins thousands of years ago, and we see this happening. And then fast forward to the 1980s, and we're uncovering more mutants. We already know that Professor X has his school for gifted young people and is collecting mutants and creating the X-Men.
Collect and trade them. Be the first on your block to own one.
Exactly. Something yeah. like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been doing this. This is nothing new. But now we're uncovering some more mutants for the purpose of this. Namely, we've got Jean Grey and Cyclops, we find early. And their powers, Jean Grey's an amazingly powerful telepath, I guess. She can read people's minds, move things, and all sorts of crazy stuff. And Cyclops can shoot laser beams out of his eyes.
I hate when that happens.
Exactly. So does he. He's coming to deal with it. So here's two characters. We have our original cast of characters. We've got Jennifer Lawrence, who plays Mystique. She can shapeshift.
Lawrence is in the X-Men movie?
This is her third one, yes.
Well, I don't remember that either.
I never knew that.
She's the
blue one. I thought the big series for her was The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holly Berry still?
No. No.
Storm
she was
whatever.
No, she was Storm in the first three X-Men, but now she's gone, and we get reintroduced to Storm in this one. It's you have to be on board. This is not a good jumping
Rebecca
on
Romaine
point.
Rebecca Romijn Stamos, is she still?
She was the first ones. She was Mystique in the first ones.
So they're replacing some, but
yes.
then some are returned.
Yes, because we've had time travel, we've now what you call retconned. We've gotten rid of the first three movies, essentially.
Okay.
Wow. Retconned?
Yeah, it means we've gone back and changed time and said, nope, this never happened. These things that you've read or seen never happened anymore because we've changed time.
We weren't able to re-sign Halle Berry
yes.
and Rebecca Romijn Stamos, so we've gone
Although
with different actresses.
Although those two should be fairly easy to get right now, I would think.
Yeah, how hard can it be to get Rebecca Romijn Stamos? Jenkins, I just need her phone number. That's all we need here.
Yes. So this is not a good jumping on point because we already have a pretty large cast of characters and their motivations. We've got Magneto, played by Michael Fassbender, who was in Jobs last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got this cast, and then they're adding more, and now they're adding new villains, and they're creating even more mutants.
Mm-hmm.
This is the main problem. There are entirely too many people. As well as Captain America handled a lot of storylines, this did not. It just has all these characters. We're supposed to care about them. Some we do, some you don't really. And then you've got this all-powerful supervillain
mm-hmm.
that can literally disintegrate cities with the wave of a hand,
mm-hmm.
and the battles feel amazingly low stakes. It's just like, you never really were, oh, what's going to happen? Well,
you have a villain who can wipe out a city, and it's low stakes?
Yes, because you never feel real danger. It's like, oh, This is a comic book movie that 10 years ago would have been like, oh, this is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel has raised the bar that to see Marvel put their name on this with Sony is just frustrating. It is... It's just, it goes in too many directions.
I'm curious about this, because, you know, I don't know anything about this world, and I barely care at all. If we weren't talking about it, I wouldn't care at all.
Yes.
But it sounds like you got a pretty cool villain there. Somebody could wipe out an entire city and you know, can do horrible things and is sucking the energy out of other mutants and all that sort of stuff. That sounds like it could be the footings of a good villain.
Yeah.
But does it fall down on the hero side? That we don't care? What are the X-Men... characters' powers?
Well, they have all sorts of different things. Professor X can read people's minds and find mutants using a machine. He can find any mutants. He can mm-hmm. manipulate people.
Okay.
Beast is one of them. He turns into this blue... He's a genius, and he turns into this blue beast, and he's very agile and strong. And
okay.
Mystique can shapeshift, and she's very good at martial arts.
Are they able to take on this mutant super villain?
Oh, yeah, of course. That's the final battle. You wait an hour and 45 minutes to get there.
Too long. Too long again.
And then, you know, the movie's only 2 hours and 11 minutes or 2 hours and 8 minutes long. So when you wait an hour and 45 minutes to get to really what they've been billing in mm-hmm. all of the trailers, when you wait that long to get there and it wraps up that quickly, you're left with this empty feeling. I will, and here's the redeeming part of it. There's a character in this, Quicksilver, and he's mind-bogglingly fast, like almost can stop time. And they do a great job where when he needs to, I'll talk about a previous movie, he's standing with the heroes and they are being shot at, and he essentially can move so fast that it's almost as if nothing is moving around him.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very short scene in the previous movie with him. This, he gets a bit more time to shine. It's that scene is, I don't want to say tense, but it sort of is. It's fun. It's got great graphics, and it's funny. All in this, like, 2.5-3 minute scene.
But it sounds like that's the only 3 minutes
that's
of the movie
it.
That you can describe.
It's just
that way.
Frustrating. Mm. There's a cameo by another future X-Man in this, and you'll see, I'm not going to spoil it, but there's a cameo that you will see that's probably important for future movies, but mm-hmm. less so for this one. It's just, it's too many ideas in one movie.
Wow. What do you give it on a scale of 10?
That's rough. I give it a 4 out of 10. Ooh. I will say this, stick around after the credits. If you're really into comic books and really into X-Men, something will happen that makes sense to you. That sets up what I think is a very interesting villain possibly for future movies.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say. You know, if you're do not hop on here. Like, if you're like, oh, I'm going to go check this out, you have to watch.
So if you've never seen another X-Men movie, this is not the one to start
no,
with.
No, it's too, you won't understand at all why it's taking place in the 1980s and even what's happening. It's just convoluted.
4 out of 10 for X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
But it'll still be the huge number this weekend, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Last week I was not here, so I did not get to review a movie called The Nice Guys. Have you seen this movie?
Is this the one with Russell Crowe?
Yes, Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling.
I did not see this either.
It is a buddy action comedy that takes place not in the 80s, but in the 1970s, which means we get to hear lousy disco music.
Oh boy.
And a lot of polyester. Now, a good buddy action comedy means you got to have chemistry between the two men, or the man and the woman, or the two women, whoever it is. The two buddies have to have chemistry. Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours. Mm. Lots of chemistry. I'm a ragtop man. Lots of chemistry in that movie. Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines did a movie together called Running Scared.
Yes, they did.
Great chemistry between them. Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin in Midnight Run.
Mm-hmm.
Great movie. Even Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker in the first Rush Hour. They were good together, right?
Yes.
Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe, no chemistry. I tried to think of a movie equivalent, and I went back to Jay Leno and Pat Morita in Collision Course.
Oh, my goodness.
Did you know Jay Leno once made a buddy action comedy? It's on.
Wow.
It's on cable channels a lot.
Really?
Yes.
What's it called?
Collision Course.
Didn't you talk to him about this?
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
No.
Okay.
You're thinking of somebody else.
I'm cutting off all the gun stops.
Yeah, no. Frank usually saves his stuff. Paul doesn't save any of his.
Yeah.
No.
just wanted to hear Jay say
I don't have anything, I don't have anything to say because I didn't do it. But what's interesting about this movie is it's written and directed by a guy named Shane Black, who should know something about getting two guys who have chemistry, because he's the guy who had Mel Gibson and Danny Glover in the first Lethal Weapon movie. Well, yeah. They were in all four Lethal Weapon movies. They were good together, right?
Yeah.
In the days when we could stand Mel Gibson, that worked out. So the plot of this movie, The Nice Guys, it starts out with a porn star named Misty Mountains dying in a car crash where she's thrown from the car, and as she's thrown from the car, her shirt pops open and her breasts are exposed as she's lying there dead on the ground.
Yeah.
That's the kind of realism we've entered into here. Soon, Ryan Gosling, who plays a private eye, and Russell Crowe, who, as far as I can tell in this movie, his entire job is going around and punching people. He's not a fighter or a UFC guy. He's just like an enforcer who gets hired to go beat people up.
It's kind of like him in real life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they get involved, and the story bogs down with a missing woman and a connection to L.A.'s dense smog and the auto industry. And I get the feeling that Shane Black, who wrote and directed it, was trying to develop something like Robert Towne's script for Chinatown, which had to do with water. And but you know what? The plot of Chinatown didn't really matter. It was the personalities of Jack Nicholson's character and John Huston as the elder there, and Faye Dunaway as I'm the sister, I'm the daughter. That was great script writing. This, not so much. Mm-hmm. You don't care about these protagonists and what they're involved in, and you can't follow what it is that's going on in this movie. Their timing is awful. The characters' personalities are so uninteresting, they cannot overcome the cumbersome plot. Oh, and by the way, it's also not funny. All those other buddy movies I mentioned, they're not officially comedies, but they have quite a bit of humor throughout them. The Nice Guy?
Mm-hmm.
None. There's nothing funny in this movie, unless you consider Russell Crowe in a fat suit with a big belly, wearing a Hawaiian shirt, funny. It's not. Ryan Gosling, at one point, does a Lou Costello imitation. An imitation, by the way, that I taught my daughter when she was a little girl. You know, if you ever watch any old Abbott and Costello stuff, particularly when they're in a haunted mansion, and Abbott has gone to go look at something in the other room, and Costello's left in this room, and there's a casket there, and don't worry about what's in that casket, Lou. Everything's going to be fine. Everything in here is dead. Nothing can move. Of course, when Abbott leaves, the casket opens up, and Costello goes...
Right.
That's pretty
Ryan,
good.
Thank you very much. Ryan Gosling doesn't do it as well as I just did, and why is he doing it in the first place in the middle of a movie?
Oh.
It's not like he says, hey, remember those Abbott and Costello movies, and explains it the way I just explained it? No. At one point, he finds himself leaning against a tree next to a dead guy, and he's trying to call to Russell Crowe, and he's... Not funny. Makes no sense. There's no reason, except somebody must have found out that Ryan Gosling can do a Lou Costello imitation. It's terrible. Do yourself a favor. Skip The Nice Guys. I give it a 4 out of 10. If you want to go see a good buddy action movie, is Keanu still in theaters?
It might be in a few. You might be able to find it somewhere, especially on a discounted first run, some of those theaters.
Yeah, the Key and Peele movie that came out, I guess, about 4 weeks ago, so much better than this. And has real chemistry and is really funny. So go see that. Do not go see The Nice Guys. It's just plain terrible. All right, one other movie that's opening up this weekend that you and I both got to see.
Yes.
Is a documentary called Wiener.
Yes.
Which is not about hot dogs. Well, if I told you we were going to talk about a movie about a guy who ran for mayor of New York, you would say, who cares? I don't live in New York. I live in St. Louis. Who cares? But if I told you we were going to talk about a documentary about a guy who ran for mayor of New York and sent out dick pics, you'd remember who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Anthony Weiner.
Yeah.
The guy who took pictures of his junk in his underwear and sexted it to several women.
Yeah.
That's what this movie is about. It's about him after he had to resign from Congress over that, a couple of years later, deciding to run for mayor of New York. And for some reason, and this is really the key to this movie, Colin, as far as I'm concerned, for some reason, he agreed to let two documentarians, Josh Krugman and Elise Steiner, follow him and his wife, Huma Abedin, who, by the way, is like a number two to Hillary Clinton in her campaign, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. She was a personal aide to her while she was in the Senate, was very tight with her then, and remains very close to her now.
Works on the campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but, I mean, even beyond that, like, remains personally close with her. This is like a very close relationship.
Bill Clinton actually did the Anthony Weiner Huma Abedin marriage ceremony. So, I mean, that's what the connection is here. So the question remains, why would these two people, who you'd think are kind of politically savvy, allow documentarians to follow him around as he's running for mayor with this whole dick pic story out there?
That gets to the crux of this, and I really like this. I'm going to start off by saying that. This creates this image of this guy that I think we all kind of wrote off as just being a jerk and a joke. And it starts out actually showing you kind of what he did while he was in the House, a snippet of it. He was in the House for about just under 14 years.
Yeah.
But it shows you what he did. And this is a guy who fought for the middle class, for first responders after 9/11. This is a guy who was principled and said, I'm going to sort of stick up for the little guy.
Seemed to be principled.
Exactly. From a political standpoint,
yes.
He very carefully crafted who he was. And they build him up with that. And then you go through him having to resign, and you realize, okay, he definitely has demons. And then it picks up in 2013 with his attempted run for mayor.
He's trying to convince people to give him a second chance.
And you have this sympathetic view of him. In the course of 10 minutes in this, you go from like, oh, what a joke, to, wow, this is a type of person, a very Mr. Smith goes to Washington feel. And then you go to, oh, man, I remember, he's a jerk. I feel kind of bad for him.
Yeah.
And then you go to, wow, I'm kind of pulling for him in 10 minutes.
It's interesting because you see the ups and downs of campaigning. You see him trying to raise money and overcoming the tabloid press. That's all boring political stuff. But the fact that he's doing it and has all the attributes that you just described, and we're seeing a guy who is still stuck in the middle of a scandal. You never see things from that person's point of view. You always see it from the press covering that guy and the public's view of them. This is inside his real life as he's trying to get a second chance.
And how honest it was, because you actually see him like heading to do interviews as all the information, Natasha in the Wayback Machine, Carlos Danger scandal is coming out with Sidney Leathers.
Yeah.
Remember that? I was sitting there and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be about Carlos Danger and Sidney Leathers. And sure enough,
she's in the movie.
She's, oh my gosh, it's so weird. It's like surreal watching this. But you see, like, him, okay, yeah, we're going to admit to this, but not to this. Okay, we're going to definitely talk about this. No, don't ask us these questions.
Oh, one of my favorite scenes in this is when he goes out to give a press conference at some event, and he's there, and the press is there, and he says, okay, I'm taking questions on this topic. So go ahead, I'll take any questions you have on this topic. Not one hand goes up. And he looks around and goes, no questions on this topic, huh? Okay, what do you want to ask me? And all their hands go up, and everyone is about the pictures of his junk.
Yes. How can we trust you again? You betrayed us once. And it was what his... It's just very... No one remembers what that race was like. Because Bill de Blasio was no one. This was a no one, nothing burger.
Okay.
Politically. And he's the mayor now.
Yeah.
Anthony Weiner did not win. Not a spoiler alert. It's reality. Anthony Weiner is not currently the mayor of New York. And it's amazing to see how that happened and how it might not have happened that way.
Did you find it tough to watch this?
At some times, I'm like, this is... And it wasn't because of him. I don't care what happens to him a whole lot. Other than the fact, the way that I feel sympathetic is they touched on it. This guy never cheated. He never touched a woman. He never physically did anything with anyone. Did he emotionally...
Yeah, try telling that to his wife.
Did he emotionally cheat on her? 100%.
Yes.
He was a bad husband. Who you feel worse for is Huma Abedin, this amazingly politically savvy, powerful woman reduced to standing by this man running for mayor.
And you can see in her face her suffering.
Times.
And in fact, at one point, the documentarian asks her, how are you doing? And she says, it's like living a nightmare.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You just feel for her. I just want to say one other thing about him, because I said the thing about the press conference. Here's another great scene in this movie. And this movie's actually fun to watch because you get to see this from an angle you never saw before. He's making an appearance somewhere at a bakery or a deli
yes,
or
exactly.
somewhere.
Exactly.
And he's in there, and people are shouting questions at him, and he says, okay, we're done here. Thank you very much. And he's walking out. He's out the door, and he's three steps from the car that he's going to get into. And somebody behind him says something. Now, any smart politician takes those next three steps, gets in the car, and gets the hell out of there.
Yes.
Not Anthony Weiner.
No.
He turns around and confronts this guy. What did you say? What did you say? And he goes up, and they have a face-to-face argument at the top of their lungs. The other guy actually is much calmer. Weiner is just completely out of control. He's gone from a guy running for mayor to a guy who's been pinned in the corner and is going to fight his way out of it no matter what. And it's all caught on not just the documentarian's cameras, but all the press who were there. They catch this thing. He can't control himself. We know that from the sexting.
Yes.
But he can't control his anger.
No, and you feel so bad for his wife, for the people who worked on a campaign with him. I'm going to say this. Right now, this is going to be a tough movie to beat for Documentary of the Year. I think it's that compelling to take you back to something that happened 2.5 years ago, essentially, almost 3 years ago, to take you back to there and show you something you had no idea what was going on behind the scenes. All we knew were the headlines, what Jon Stewart was saying and Stephen Colbert were saying. That's all we knew about it. And now we get to look behind the curtain and... Wow.
Even if you never cared about this guy or cared about who was mayor of New York, why would you? To see this movie is to see something you've never seen before, which is a politician coming apart at the seams.
Oh, my gosh. It's...
I kept asking myself, why did they let these cameras in? Why did they let these people come in and film this? So much so that at the end of the movie, the documentarian says, why did you let us come in here and film you?
Yes. Oh, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Now, I will say, I don't like him enough to make the movie a highly rated movie. Like, on a scale of 10, I'm only giving it a 7.
And see, I gave it an 8.5 out of 10. Okay. I really enjoyed this. And it was because I'm a political junkie nerd. I like seeing... And to see a politician in front of a camera openly saying, like, essentially, we're going to lie about this. To us, to say that and know that it's being preserved, it's the hubris of this.
There's a camera in the room facing you. And the microphone is on.
We're gonna and at one point he says, Huma, come in here, everyone else get out. And they're talking behind a closed door with their mic packs on. This is Steve Carell. It is Michael Scott from The Office thinking, oh, the door means they can't hear me. It's the Jinx from HBO being like, I'm going to confess to murder behind a closed door. They can't possibly
hear me.
Nobody
can hear me. This microphone. Everyone won't pick that up.
Yes. I will say this. This is probably the best endorsement I can give. We got an online screener. We watched this at home.
Yeah.
And my wife, 45 minutes into it, is pretty late at night. I'm going to go to bed. 50 minutes later, she was like, that was good. I'm glad I watched it. She stayed up and enjoyed it. And she's not a political junkie like me and hates him altogether.
Did you have a question you were going to ask? You looked like you...
No, I was just going to say... After what he went through before, why wouldn't he think any different of what, he's still able to, after the whole picture deal.
Well, he lost his job. He got thrown out of Congress because of that.
Yes, but he's still involved in politics.
Yeah.
So
he's a political commenter, essentially. They bring him on every now and then.
Is that what he's doing now? He shows up as a pundit on TV?
Yeah, to do pro-Democrat stuff. Hopefully.
It's called Weiner.
I think he's going to be on Naked and Afraid and then Dating Naked. Those are his next appearance.
It's called Weiner. It's our highest rated movie of the week. 7 out of 10 for that. 4 out of 10 for Apocalypse. 4 out of 10 for The Nice Guys.
Weiner is only at the Frontenac, I believe.
Okay.
That's the only place you can see it in St. Louis. Okay. So, yes.
This doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't.
Weiner is only at Frontenac.
It's on the little Ferris wheel of Wieners. Ask for the toasted bun while you're there. I think this is a movie a lot more people are going to see on Netflix than are going to see it in the theaters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we have a whole bunch of other showbiz stuff we have to get to here as we continue on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris, Ian Geist, Dan Strauss, Colin Jeffrey all here. As we continue our showbiz segment for this final Friday of the month of May, we roll into Memorial Day weekend, and from here on out, it's pretty much all comic book movies and superheroes and explosions and big summertime movies. So let's turn our attention to TV stuff. Have you seen the HBO movie All the Way with Bryan Cranston as LBJ?
No, I mean, he won a Tony for the role.
Yes, I saw it on Broadway when I was going to visit my daughter a couple of years ago. Went to see Bryan Cranston in the role, and he was fantastic. On stage almost the entire 3 hours as our 36th president, and just did a phenomenal job. And when I heard they were making it into a TV movie, I thought, well, good, more people are going to get to see this phenomenal performance. I'm here to tell you the TV version is even better.
That's amazing.
It is about LBJ in the first year of his presidency, right after JFK is assassinated and he takes over, and what he accomplishes in that first year, particularly when it comes to the Civil Rights Act. It has some terrific performances from Frank Langella. Bradley Whitford plays Hubert Humphrey. Anthony Mackie plays Martin Luther King. Melissa Leo plays Lady Bird Johnson. Stephen Root plays J. Edgar Hoover. And it opens up the play, and you get to now see scenes on LBJ's ranch, not just in the White House. You see the force of will that was that man in the Oval Office and elsewhere. And, you know, he was a crude, down-home boy who changed himself into something else when he was addressing the public. But behind the scenes, he could, what's a polite way to put it, cajole people to follow his the way he wanted things to go. And it is really, really, really good TV. It's on HBO all month long. Set your DVR. Try to catch it. It's called All the Way. What do you have, Colin?
Just a few things. You've heard of promise rings. You know, young people, I promise to marry you and mm-hmm. stay faithful to you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question. Have you and your wife ever said you were going to watch a streaming show together, and one of you has cheated on the other and watched ahead?
No. We've had series that she loved and watched it when it was actually on TV, and then I decided a couple years later, okay, I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch that. And she had to not tell me what was going to happen in the show yeah. as we went forward. I think The Sopranos was the first one I did that with, and also she was responsible for me watching Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I don't think we've ever been watching a streaming show together and run into that conflict.
Ian, you and Angela?
No.
Okay, that has happened in our house. Like, my wife will never see the end of Newsroom because I watched ahead. I killed it, and she's like, I won't watch it now. Because you have watched ahead, and on principle, I will no longer watch this show because wow. she knows it will kill me not to be able to discuss it with her.
And so I was going to ask, how does that turn out to be a good thing for your wife if she doesn't see a show she liked, but she's now holding your brain hostage because you want to talk about it?
Yeah, well, a group, and if you're a fan of Simon Pegg and, I'm going to forget his name, the Cornetto trilogy, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, the director, and I just blanking on his name. Anyway, Cornetto is working on something called the Netflix Commitment Rings. And the way that this works is they will have a device in your home.
Nick Frost,
thank you. That will disable the streaming devices in your home, like the ability to get on Netflix or Amazon Prime, if both rings are not there. So you take one, your loved one takes one, and now you cannot watch ahead.
Okay, I call BS.
Without your
Goodness. No, I call BS on this. There's no such product, and there's no technology that can do that.
They're working on it.
There's no technology that can keep me from watching something on TV.
I'm just telling you, they're working on it.
The only way you can do that is by hiding the remote.
Yes. So so we'll see. It's a fun idea. I like the idea. Quick thing about box office.
Let me just say one thing about Netflix. They announced this week a huge deal with Disney. Starting this fall, Netflix is going to be the only streaming service to have all the Disney movies, all the Pixar movies, and all the Marvel movies going forward for like a multi-year deal, isn't it?
Yes. And here's why this is a big deal for them. The box office this year, we take the top 100 movies. The top five movies have earned as much, actually more, by about $100 million, than the next 95 movies.
Wow.
At the domestic box office.
And those are all Disney movies, right?
Well, we've got Zootopia, Disney, Captain America, Disney, Marvel, Disney, Deadpool, Marvel, Disney. They've got Dawn of Justice, it's DC, and Jungle Book. And yeah, so that's why it's a big deal. Three of the top five movies are Disney properties. And then one last story real quick. Allegiant that I reviewed, it's the latest in the Divergent trilogy with Shailene Woodley. And
you hated it.
I hated it. Welp, they were breaking the final book into two parts. This was the first of part three. The studio came out and essentially said, we were racing forward so much to make a deadline that we could not maintain quality control. They said, just say, yep, it was bad. We know it was bad. And so now please come watch part two, because we're telling you, we know the first part was bad. So trust us not to make another bad movie.
Right.
I don't know that it works that way.
Right.
Yes.
Last thing I want to mention is today is the first day that the second season of Bloodline will be on Netflix. Bloodline is a very interesting series. It had 13 episodes in the first season last year. The middle episodes were a little slow. This was another example of a streaming show that somebody decided had to be 13 episodes. But why does it have to be 13 episodes? It could have been six episodes and been twice as good.
That's Netflix's series length, season length.
They have to stop that. They are not a traditional television network where they have to fill 13 weeks or 22 weeks of a season. Give me six great hours, and you still get the same amount of money from me every month.
Yeah.
You don't have to spend as much money to make it. However,
and there's always power in life.
Bloodline was a really good series. And I'm not saying that just because it starred my Mississippi Grind co-star, Ben Mendelsohn.
Here we go.
But it's got Kyle Chandler from Friday Night Lights and a bunch of other things. Sissy Spacek, Sam Shepard, Linda Cardellini from Freaks and Geeks. And just intriguing. It'll be interesting to see, because the Ben Mendelsohn character, did I mention I co-starred with him in Mississippi Grind?
I don't think so.
No.
His character died in the first season.
Yes.
And yet his name is in the credits for the second season.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's not a ghost thing or a Patrick Duffy, Bobby Ewing, it was all a dream kind of thing. I'm interested to see what it is. Start streaming today. So if you were a fan of it, you can watch it and we'll all figure it out together.
Yep.
Or in Colin's house, not, because we don't have the Netflix commitment rings.
Oh, boy.
That's our showbiz stuff for this week on the Big 550 KTRS.